This is John Gill, and welcome to Fraud Talk. And today, we will be talking about marketing your CFE services with Janet McCard. Janet is a good friend of mine, and she's also the founding partner of McCard Accounting Consulting, LLC, and will be leading a session at the upcoming ACFE Global Fraud Conference on marketing tips for CFEs. Thinking back to when you first started, you know, what were some of the challenges? How long have you been doing this on your own, Janet?
I started my own firm in April of 2009, so I guess that means, it's 5 years exactly that I've been out on my own now. And I had been thinking about it. Now, here's the kicker. I've been thinking about going out on my own for almost 5 years before that. And so I had a chance to really investigate what it meant to be out on my own, I spent time noticing what worked and what didn't for the purposes of going out on my own. And so it wasn't a last-minute decision. It wasn't something I went into lightly. I spent a lot of time planning and visualizing and goal-setting and researching and talking to those clients that I had that could help me sort of bridge the gap between being part of a large firm. And I guess for the sake of your listeners who don't know this about me, we should let them know that I came from one of those auditing and accounting firms that you were talking about. We had a division that did litigation support, and I was exclusively doing fraud examination and litigation support, but I wasn't doing it on my own. And so I had a chance to sort of observe and learn and watch and get a lot of the questions answered in a way that would make sense for me when I finally went out on my own. And I think that was really beneficial for me that I took so long in deciding when and how I was going to do it.
What I've advised people, I know this is difficult, is to find some kind of a niche, something that you know more about or that you have some special expertise. How important do you think that is to identify something, anything, to kind of get you started?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. There's a lot of research out there, especially in the accounting world, that shows if you have a niche, you have an industry specialty, you have something that you're really good at better than anyone else in your geographic region, you then have the ability to bill at a higher rate, to get a greater value out of that specialty that you have. So maybe that's healthcare, maybe that's working in governmental entities, whatever the specialty, the area that you work in you can parlay that into higher billing rates. You then know where to find your customers, the clients that you're going to bring in. I think having a niche is a great thing if you are so suited for one. Now, I'll tell you that as a firm, our niche is not an industry niche, but what makes our firm different and provides us our marketing niche is that I'm a CPA, my partner is a private investigator, and so we are dually licensed as both accounting, as an accounting firm, and as a private investigations firm. And to my knowledge, we're the only firm in our geographic area that is dually licensed in that way.
Well, I think that's a good point. If it's a skill that you don't have, then you may need to bring someone else in to broaden the types of services that you're able to offer and hopefully offer something that maybe some of the other firms aren't doing.
Well, and you can certainly bring someone else in. I caution you to bring someone else in simply because they have the skills. You first have to get along with them, work well with them, and then you'll discover, oftentimes you can discover that partner has a skill set that makes the firm better as a whole, and that fortunately is what happened because I founded the firm as a sole practice in April of 2009. I brought in Beth Moore as my partner in 2011, and the business exploded because with our combined skill set, we had a much better applicability to the kinds of cases that we wanted to bring in.
You mentioned this a little bit before, but talking about the geographic area, that's another thing that when I've been talking to people is it does make a big difference where you're located.
It, it does make a big difference where you're located. You have to know, here's kind of the secret behind marketing, if there is a secret. The secret behind marketing is knowing your customer. And part of knowing your customer is knowing the geographic market that you're selling in. And if within your geographic market there aren't enough customers, you either have to expand your service offerings or you have to expand the geography. And there is no one way to do marketing. It really depends on what your specialty is, what your niche is, what your best service offerings are. Then you can determine who you're going to sell to, and who you sell to is what determines how you sell to them or how you reach them to sell to them. So, I'm in New Mexico. That's where our firm is, Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is a really, for those folks who are listening who have never been to New Mexico, you can drive 100 miles and not go through a town, which is very unlike some markets back east or internationally. So we have a very big geographic footprint. We actually, our designated geographic footprint is everything from essentially the Rocky Mountains to the Pacific Ocean. And we're a pretty small firm, but that's our designated geographic, that's our chosen geographic footprint. And so we travel a lot for our cases. But if you are a firm in, let's say, the New York City metropolitan area, your geographic footprint can probably be much smaller because there are more opportunities to find clients in a densely populated area.
Let's turn to the situation where you've got an accounting auditing firm or a firm that's providing maybe consulting services, litigation services to their clients, but they've not jumped headlong into fraud examination or fraud prevention and detection, and it's something that they maybe have done one or two cases, they're interested in it, and they want to start offering more fraud-related services to their clients. Do you have any suggestions, if you've got an established firm, about how to provide more fraud-related services, anti-fraud, prevention, detection services to their clients?
Well, my first suggestion is come to the breakout session I'm giving in June in San Antonio at the annual fraud conference, because that's exactly what we're talking about. But that aside, aside from that sort of cheeky answer, there is a way to do that. The first thing you have to do, if you're a full-service firm and you're providing assurance services, which is to say audits, the first thing you need to do is to make sure that you understand what the independence requirements are as an auditor, so that as you're offering consulting services, you don't violate independence on any of your audit clients. Once you have that in hand, then there are ways to cross-sell to your audit and your tax and your bookkeeping services clients. And most of those are either internal investigations or fraud prevention investigations or fraud prevention engagements are going to be the kinds of things that you can cross-sell to business owners. If you're going to sell litigation services, you're going to sell those usually to attorneys. And so I think I alluded to this a couple of minutes ago, you have to know your customers, but you also have to know yourself. And it sounds a little bit philosophical, but you have to know what your strengths and weaknesses are in the terms of the services that you offer. Once you know what those strengths and weaknesses are, then you know which customers you're going to get, you need to go after. And then once you know those customers, then you can determine how you best get your name in front of them and can talk to them about the services that you do offer.
Janet, I think that's a really good point. Give me some tips on how to get to know your customers. What are some just common things that you can do that people may not think about?
One thing that worked really well for me was, in the litigation world, it's the attorneys that bring the business in. And so your ultimate client, the one who's paying the bill, is their client too, but it's the attorney, and I refer to them as gatekeepers. It's the attorney who brings the business to you. And one of the things that was really beneficial for me was going out to lunch with a couple of those gatekeeper attorneys and talking to them about what they were looking for and what they needed and the kinds of services that I could be helpful in. And it sort of, some of it was some of what they told me was new information, and some of it was information I already had, but it enabled me to make sure that I was meeting that my skill set, my expertise, the expertise that we could offer through my firm, through the firm that I was, the baby little firm that I was starting, that the services that we were, that I was putting in the initial service package were the services that they really wanted. And, you know, the best way to know your customer is to ask them what they need. What is it they're looking for? You know, the paradigm that we have in our firm is different than you'll find in other firms owned by CFEs. I know other CFEs who do a lot of initial investigations. They go out and they don't work through an attorney. They do initial investigations directly. They do initial investigations directly with a business owner without an attorney involved. Well, if that's the paradigm you're looking for, then you need to go talk to those business owners and find out what they're looking for and what they need.
I agree. My experience has always been, if you can get them away from the office and a little bit relaxed, like take them to lunch, get them to kind of reflect on what's going on in the office, and then I like to ask them, you know, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. What keeps you up at night? And that, frankly, that's one of the questions I use in fraud preventions all the time, and you get the best information in a fraud prevention by asking that question. But yeah, you ask the business owner, what keeps you up at night? What are the things that have you worried? Because as a anti-fraud professional, those are the areas where I want to look at, I want to examine them closely, and then suggest areas for improvement. Or alternatively, those are the areas that we're going to be looking at because that's where the scheme is potentially taking place.
Here's a question that I get a lot that I've never come up with a good answer for, and that is, you know, I talk to students, I get emails from students who are, you know, working on, it could be a bachelor's degree in accounting, students working on, you know, master's degrees in fraud examination, forensic accounting, and they want to get experience, but they don't know how, and it's the conundrum that's been plaguing students for, you know, dozens or if not hundreds of years. How do you get your foot in the door when people want experience, but they won't hire you if you don't have any experience?
Right, exactly. You know, that's a tough one. And I went through that. I knew before I became a CPA that I wanted to be a certified fraud examiner. My goal was to be a certified fraud examiner. My goal was not to be a CPA. My goal was to do fraud examination. And I'll tell you what I did, and it worked for me. I told everyone that I encountered from 1993. From 1993, when that became my goal, I told everyone I encountered, that I was going to be a fraud examiner. That's what I was going to be. I want to be a CFE. I want to be a fraud examiner. I want to do litigation support and internal investigations full-time. That's what I want to do. It took 10 years of telling everyone I knew, but that's exactly what I created. And I think part of it is that you have to tell people that that's what you want. Now, it both opened and closed doors. It opened doors into doing fraud examination full-time, but there were jobs I didn't get because in the job interview I told them I wished to do fraud examination. That's what I wanted to do, and they didn't hire me. That wasn't what they were looking for, and that's fine. It wouldn't have been a good fit. But by telling everyone I encountered, and when I say everyone, I mean everybody, the dental hygienist, the people who were interviewing me, my professors at the college, I told everyone that that's what I wanted to do and that's what I wanted to be. And I put myself through school, my master's program, as a paralegal. Well, when I told my boss that, he started teaching me the law. And so then when I went to actually get a job as an accountant, I knew all of this legal knowledge, which made me invaluable for a litigation support division. So then I got transferred into the litigation support division when I started working in accounting because I knew litigation. And so it creates opportunities by telling people that's what you want to do. Networking at your local ACFE chapter is a much more targeted way to do that. but going to your local ACFE chapter, whether it's a student chapter or the local professional chapter, and telling people that this is what you want to do, this is where you want to go, opens opportunities. There is no one tried and true way to get those jobs, but if you don't ask, the answer is always no. So just keep asking.
I think you're right, and a lot of people are looking for some kind of magic bullet, but I think you said that very well. You've just got to tell everybody that you possibly can. Maybe it's like Johnny Appleseed, and you never know when one's going to land just right and grow a tree.
And I think that's exactly right. You just have to sow the seeds, and then eventually it grows.
And volunteer for everything that you can, regardless of how useless it seems. What I've noticed, and this is just a sidebar as you were talking, now let me do kind of a wrap-up question. You talked about some of your history and some of the things that have worked. Thinking back on everything that you've done, tell me some of the things that you think, sum up this I did right. For whatever reason, you didn't know it at the time, but as it turned out, these were things that really, worked for you. And then tell me, what are some of the things that just, for in your particular situation, did not work out so well?
Well, I think the thing that worked out, one of the things that probably worked out the best for me was getting the opportunity to do public speaking. I come from despite the fact that I'm a CPA these days, I come from a fine arts background, and I did a lot of theater when I was younger. And so falling into public speaking was, for me, kind of a natural course. And I discovered over the years, quite by accident, that attorneys looking for expert witnesses love the fact that I'm comfortable in front of a crowd, because it means that I'm comfortable in front of a jury and a judge. And so public speaking turned out to be quite beneficial, even though I was doing it just because I loved the aspects that reminded me of doing theater when I was younger. It turned out that it was really good for the firm and my profession and my career to do that. And that was kind of an accidental discovery, but it worked out really well. I think that the other thing that was a sort of a happy accident for me was that I came into both accounting and fraud examination a little later than life. It wasn't what I decided to do as I was coming out of high school. As I said, I had a theater background, and a dance degree is lovely, but it doesn't pay a mortgage. And so I bounced around professionally for a while. But what I discovered since then is that every job I had, whether it was working in the medical office, whether it was working in the law office, every job I have, I apply nearly daily in our investigations, because I have worked in those areas. And so I hear from people when I'm teaching courses, which I do for ACFE frequently, they call me later and they say, I was interested that you do this, and Janet, I feel like I'm in this dead-end job, what do I do? And the answer is always, learn where you are, because it will apply where you're going. And I think that if you really learn the position you're in, you'll discover that maybe that's the niche that you have once you become a fraud examiner. I think that happens frequently. I have colleagues who were nurses, and they were really good nurses, and then they moved into the administrative side and became CFE. Well, their nursing experience helps them to be better investigators in the medical field. So learn where you are. Learn what you're doing, because it will help you in the future. And I think it helped me. Now, on the other side, you said, what are some of the things that I wish I had done better or wish I had known? I wish I had been better about respecting my own value when I started out. I was afraid to ask for full rates. I was afraid to ask for a retainer. I was apologetic about what I was charging. And I wish I hadn't done that. It took a while for me to value my own expertise, because for me it comes fairly easy. I've been doing it for a while. But that doesn't mean it comes easily to the people who are hiring me. And I wish I had learned earlier on to respect the value of the work that I have.
Well, good advice. Well, Janet, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. It was a pleasure as always, and I will look forward to your session at the Global Fraud Conference in June.
I'm looking forward to being there.